The Quintessential Podcast is proud to announce that we have a new presenting sponsor, Axia Time. Axia Time is a really cool watch company focused on ultra-custom watches to commemorate life's greatest accomplishments. Watches whose styling and quality match the significance of the accomplishments they represent. Axia Time is also partnered with all the leading lacrosse organizations to create All-American timepieces for high school boys and girls and college men and women. Axia Time even creates timepieces for elite awards like the Tourton and Naismith. If you're interested in a high-quality, Swiss-made timepiece to commemorate a great accomplishment, you need to check out their designs at axiatime.com. That's axiatime.com. If you're celebrating a team achievement, like a state championship, national championship, or even world championship, you have to check out the timepieces they created for teams like Jesuit Dallas, the University of Maryland, and even the USA U21 World Champions.
This is the Quintessential Podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome in. Paul Carcaterra is our guest today, fresh off a college football season. I think we did, 15 straight weeks. We get a break this week with the Army-Navy game. Carc, fresh off a MAC championship game. I was in Las Vegas last weekend hosting the Dr. Pepper tuition giveaway. We turn our attention to lacrosse. We're getting close. There's only 2 months till games.
You and I exchanged texts throughout the fall with football, but it always comes back to lacrosse. Look, man, I've said it many times. That's my happy place. I could call lacrosse 12 months a year. I get sad when Memorial Day ends because I know it's the end of the college season. Now that we have PLL, that gives me the summer fix. So I look at it this way, man. I got to get through 3+ months a year. It's not a big ask for myself without lacrosse.
I kind of rely on it to recharge. And right now is interesting because we've got bowl games. And then you turn the calendar to January and practice starts. I mean, I was talking to Joe Alberisi. Practice starts January 8th. Teams, you know, a lot of teams report January 4, 5, 6. And so training camp's a month away. The subject of this podcast is going to be the Inside Lacrosse Top 50, which was released and got a lot of attention, and it should. We're not here to criticize. We're more here to discuss. Discuss some players on the list, discuss some players who are snubbed, discuss some of the challenges of rating players. It's a very difficult assignment. It's a very gray assignment. I think along the way we'll touch on some decent topics. Is that fair?
Fair enough, man. You said something about preseason All-Americans and lists. What was that phrase or sentence you said?
The word hollow rings with me. Yeah. You know, for those who are anointed, it's danger. I mean, you've been put up on a pedestal without doing anything. And for those that are ignored, it's major fuel.
I agree. And you look back to all of these preseason awards and the midseason awards too. I even have trouble with midseason awards, right? Because it's not finality to a journey. And finality to a journey in sports is all that really matters. Like, how did you finish? And when I say how did you finish, it's not just like you win a national championship, everyone else discarded. No, you have to look at the entire body of work of an athlete throughout the course of his or her season. So I have trouble with preseason awards or preseason lists. I have trouble even with midseason because I respect the entire journey. Like, do you imagine if you were to look at Jalen Milroe and give him some kind of a midseason award for Alabama, you would have laughed, right? Like, he wouldn't have been recognized for anything in the SEC or what have you. Now, he's not a Heisman finalist, the quarterback for Alabama, but I bet you he's in the top 8. So I respect his journey. He said something that was so fitting that I think any athlete can connect with. When everyone else doubted him and everyone else stopped believing in him, he didn't stop believing in himself.
Don't stop believing.
Yeah.
I got to see Jalen and Alabama a third of the way through the season at Mississippi State when they were starting to build. And you could see that the coaching staff had isolated what Jalen could do really well. And the one thing about lacrosse, it's like football, Carc, none of these players live in isolation. you know, the further we get away from our playing days, like the more acknowledgement is heaped on the stars, you know, the stars from championship teams in past. But if you really think about it, like, we're all a product of our team. We're all a product. I was always a product of my defense.
Yeah.
Always.
I mean, you called my games at college. Could you imagine if I didn't play with Casey Powell and Rob Cabot? I would have been a total scrub.
No, but they accentuated your skill strengths. So I think when we talk about these lists, there's got to be like, what's around them? Are they being put in a position to succeed or fail? Again, look, lacrosse, if there's 10 guys out there, there's probably 20 on each team who are major contributors. And so that sometimes I think gets lost.
That's a great point too, Q. And you also have to take into account, like, you look at this list and there are certain players who are on this list who demand, as an offensive player, the opposing team's top defender every single time, right? Like, that is a daunting task. If you play in the ACC, you play in the Big Ten, you play in the Patriot League, you play anywhere, you're attracting the team's top defender. The difference between the one and the three, okay? Have fun being the target every single week. Like Joey Spolina last year at Syracuse as a freshman attracted the top close defender every single game, okay? That is a tough, tough task. And for him to put those kind of points up as a freshman, like, props.
Well, grab your lists, everybody. We got the 1 through 50, the inside lacrosse list, and kudos to them for doing this list. It's not an easy assignment, but we look at 50 through 41. We'll work our way from 50 to 1. Will Colletti comes in at 50. It's a guy I like a lot for Army of Fogo. Jake Pisano of Albany, a long pole. Then there's too many long poles on this list, but Jake's one I think that needs to stay. Tommy Burke from Ohio State, a Fogo. Again, too many Fogos on this list, and that's one that stood out to me.
Yeah, look, the Fogo situation, I'm okay with, you know, maybe two, maybe three on that list, but don't have you know, five, six Fogos, and don't have a plethora of long stick middies. And I think we're going to talk about the long stick midfield position, and I think those players, although some of them are excellent, will be on this list no matter what. Some of them have the stats that pop out, and you're going to compare them to a close defender, and it's not fair. Those guys are in the middle of the field. They have so many more opportunities for trail checks and calls turnovers and ground balls, where close defenders and lockdown guys don't get that kind of an opportunity. So I think you can never look at a long stick midfielder and a close defender in the same light. And this list has way too many LSMs as opposed to close defenders.
How many games do we cover? Let's say a sample size of 20, where at the end of the day, you say that LSM won the game for them.
Yeah. I mean, look, unless you're a Brody Merrill or a Mike Earhart, right? Or one of these game defining guys. Yeah. That's a great point. That's a great point.
Like Fogos, you know, 2 out of 20 games, maybe goalies, three or four.
Here's the deal with Fogos, and I respect Fogos, okay? And I always think there's a place in the sport of lacrosse. There's some people like, get rid of the position. No, don't get rid of the position. But in the PLL and in college lacrosse, two entities that we cover, when's the last time the top Fogo won a championship? Well, in college, it was 2015. Trevor Baptiste in Denver. Everyone thought when Yale won in 2018, now they're getting the best face-off guy in the country in T.D. Erland. They're a slam dunk. They're going to win it again. They didn't win it. Okay? They didn't win it.
Back to the list. Two sophomore middies are in that group from 41 to 50. Matt Collison of Hopkins burst on the scene last year. Big, strong, can barrel his way to the net. He's a Canadian. And Evan Plunkett of Army, who put up gigantic historical stats in terms of Army lacrosse midfield freshmen, like the best all time.
He was over 2020, wasn't he?
Over 2020. I talked to Joe Albarisi last week. He said he's worked on his shooting and his defense has improved dramatically. Look for Plunkett to be a two-end guy. That's an interesting, I think both players are extremely, really, really good and still have upside.
Absolutely. I look at Collison as a force, like physical stature, the ability to get to the rack. As Canadian as he is, he plays like an American midfielder. Like, I don't think he's like your quintessential, no pun intended, Canadian midfielder. I think he's got a lot of American type of slashing and power. Like, there's not a lot of shoulder slips with him. It's pure force and beef when he gets at you. The Plunkett kid was phenomenal as a dual threat midfielder. And I'm not saying offense, defense, passing, feeding as one category, scoring as another. There was no better freshman middie in the country last year than Evan Plunkett. Both those guys I'm cool with belonging.
Chase Erlin, transfer from Cornell to Hopkins, should be the goalie for the Blue Jays. And 41 is interesting. Russell Melendez. You know, Russell Melendez shows up at the PLL game in Baltimore, the game when it was so hot and I was down on the bench, and he's standing behind the benches. He's a big dude. Have you ever seen him in person?
Yeah,
he's bigger. He looks like Jaromir Jagr, like with the hair and the body type. He's a lot bigger than he's listed at.
I love his game. He was my penny stock last year because when he transferred to Marquette, he was kind of under the radar because he was dinged up quite a bit. But when I was watching some tape on him when he was healthy and I went back to like his high school days, this kid has style. He's fun to watch. He's quick. Like you said, he's really thick. Like his legs is his bottom base is really, really strong. He's got the international experience from the World Games playing with Team Puerto Rico. I just love, like, there's some street ball to Melendez as well, but there's substance too. I think he's going to play so confident. I think he belongs. I'm going to be honest with you. Chase Erlin at 42. I've seen Chase Erlin play at a super high level, and I've scratched my head sometimes saying, I don't know if he is a top goaltender, meaning a top one, two, or three guy in the country. I think this year he's going to have an opportunity week in and week out with Hopkins' schedule. That schedule is an absolute bear. He will be able to shine and solidify himself as a top goaltender in the country. But him on this list, and am I allowed to say who's snubbed because I'm looking at this? Everyone knows the list is out. Can I say something here?
Yeah.
There's no way Chase Erlin's a better goalie than Will Mark. I'm sorry. That's just, to me, the volume of shots that Will Mark saw last year on a defense that was
horrible.
Swiss cheese sometimes, right? Like, he was assaulted with shots week in and week out. To me, Will Mark and Liam Entman, because of Entman's size, and you could say Entman plays in a system. Entman is phenomenal goalie. He was unreal down the stretch for Notre Dame. Big reason why they won the national championship, him being the MVP. Those are the two guys that I think are PLL-type goalies.
Mark could be better in the PLL.
Yeah. In college, Entman has a system of Notre Dame. He's been there forever. Mark's only in his second year. He's so familiar with the defense in South Bend, Entman. As a pro stopper, I really need to think about this one. Who would be a better pro stopper? And I know we're talking about the college game, but there's a lot of crossover. You can't tell me that Will Mark is not a top 50 player. To me, he's the second best goalie and maybe the first in the country. And he's not on that list. I'm not disrespecting Chase Erlin here. Chase Erlin's had a phenomenal career, and he will be able to prove it with that schedule this year at Hopkins. But it just doesn't sit right for me when Will Mark's not on this list.
Well, if we're going to talk snubs there, while we're talking Hopkins, you know, Jacob Angelus is a guy, 61 points. And if you really watch the Jays, when he wasn't in the lineup when he was injured, they were just a different offense. His versatility, his quickness, his eyes. I think that was a big weapon for John Crawley and the Hopkins group last year. And we mentioned Army with Evan Plunkett. You know, what do you think about Jacob Morin, the lefty shooter? He's a one-dimensional guy, but...
But man, he does that one dimension better than anyone. I mean, when he has the ball, and I'm not even kidding when I say this. This sounds ridiculous. At 20 yards, you need to start thinking hard.
He's Mac O'Keefe. He's Mike Springer, who you played with. He's AJ Shannon.
He needs more time than Mac O'Keefe to get it off, and he shoots harder than Mac O'Keefe. So Mac O'Keefe's release is quicker. Jacob Morin has that swooping release, like Mike Springer. It's like run for the hills, right? If you get hit with that shot, good luck.
Yeah, Rhys Bjork, apparently for Army, has had a strong fall, according to Coach Joe Albarese. So let's page it forward, 40 through 31, the next 10. And speculative selection at 40 with Jack Boyden of Virginia, the Tufts transfer who put up a zillion points. I don't have a problem with this. I just think he's a little bit on the unproven side. We don't know if he's going to play attack. We don't know if he's going to play midfield.
I was at a practice this fall when I was covering a Virginia football game. Boyden's skill set is super, super high end. And him playing with Connor Schellenberger, I mean, I think he's going to get 40 goals in his sleep. I personally, I'd probably put him on the inside. And you can be creative too. Like, you know, Virginia's done that in the past. Like, you know, Matt Posque and A.J. Shannon played a little bit inside. Posque more as a midfielder because you have guys like Schellenberger and McCabe Millen, and you can't forget Peyton Cormier. So where does Boyden play? If he plays attack, he's a 40-goal scorer in his sleep. If he plays midfield, maybe the production's a little bit down, but he's super creative too. Like, when you look at some of these wraparound shots that he has, I think from a skill set, he deserves to be on this list. He's unproven in this field, but I think that he has certain aspects to his game that are even, you know, the type that you see in the PLL from a creative perspective. So I'm okay with Boyden there.
Okay. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he has a Xander Dixon like statistical season.
Absolutely. I mean, you're playing with Connor Schellenberger, who you know, people laughed at me last year when I said I think he's going to leave the best player, you know, in Virginia history. He came on when he was healthy in the playoffs last year. He was phenomenal. And he has what doesn't grow on trees. It's being a dodging attackman who can feed at an elite level.
Matt Noe, the goalie from UMass, comes in at 39. I haven't had the opportunity to cover a UMass game live in, I don't know, a decade. Andrew Geppert, defender from Carolina, is at 38. I think Paul Barton is the Tar Heels' best defender.
So do I. And that was a unit that struggled at times last year. You know, when you look at a guy like Geppert, right? He's the type of player who can pop athletically. He did some time at Brown, and he had a really nice career there and got those extra years because of COVID. But I thought Barton was more of an assignment-driven player that demanded, you know, a certain type of play against opposing teams' top guys. Again, like I said in the past, when you're going after a top guy, it's a different ball game. And Geppert is as nice of a player he is. I just don't see it as a top 50. This is crazy to me. And can I talk about a snub here? Because he plays.
Yeah. Good spot to slot it in.
How in the world? What universe do we live on, where Bobby Van Buren is not a top 50 player in college lacrosse? Honestly, what tape are we watching? Now, Bobby Van Buren plays close defense. Okay, so he's not going to have the stats where he's running around the field in the middle of the field or taking wings where he has ground balls or cause turnovers because he's trail checking. You watch that young man play. He's a top three defender in the country. Okay. He's a top three defender in the country, Bobby Van Buren. He shut down Connor Schellenberger last year. That defense for Ohio State statistically really, really struggled. Bobby Van Buren every single week held up his end of the bargain. It is a travesty that he's not on this list. It's an absolute joke, to be honest with you. And I don't want to point to Geppert here as the guy that like took Van Buren's spot, but what world are we living on?
37, Chris Kavanaugh, Notre Dame. Complimentary player. He's going to be the third or fourth option on offense, fifth option. Nice player. Nice player. Getting better.
He's getting better. I think he's got a clutch gene and a toughness that probably puts him in a position to warrant the kind of accolades that top 50 players have. Like, you can't question the ice in the veins in the big stage moments, though. And I thought he delivered that last year. I have no problem with Kavanaugh being on this list.
Yeah, no, he's going to be productive. and the Notre Dame attack is going to be really the centerpiece of that team. Sam English, Syracuse transfer.
Well, you forgot Carpenter from Duke.
Carpenter from Duke. You know, it's like he's been in the lineup forever. Nice player. Really
nice
player.
Who would you take, Carpenter? I'm going to ask you this question.
Carpenter's better off the ground and running up the field than he is playing defense. He's one of those LSMs who, in my mind, I'm not really sure they like playing defense.
Like Matt Neufeld, kind of?
Yeah. It's like they play defense.
They're valuable. They'll get you a ground ball. They'll knock down passes. They'll trigger transition. He's got great stick skills.
Great athlete. You can put him out there. And obviously, he's played in a zillion big games.
I think a guy like Carpenter last year is in a much better spot when he can be supported by really good shorties. Like Duke had really good shorties in 2023. They did not have really good shorties in 2022. So it allows him to be a little bit more of himself, I think, when he's surrounded with good shorties. But I'm going to ask you, every single time there is a guy who has a 6-foot stick, who would you take? Tyler Carpenter or Bobby Van Buren?
Well, they play two different positions.
I know, but yeah, top 50 players we're talking. Players.
Bobby Van Buren is covering the number one every week in the Big Ten. He's covering Mikey Boehm. He's covering Melendez or Angeles.
Yeah.
he's covering Ross Scott.
Yeah.
You know. All right, let's spin it forward. Sam English, Syracuse, you were up in the dome for a college football game earlier, about a month ago. And you went to a Syracuse practice?
Yeah, they're loaded. Offensively, their top nine guys are as good as, like, if you take a 9 for 9, their top nine are as good as anyone's nine. I think, you know, the biggest issue for Syracuse has been the face-off. But Sam English and Jake Stevens, coming from Princeton as grad transfers, are unbelievable on the floor. Both of these guys have played short stick D-middy in the past. They're just two-way studs at the midfield. Sam English also, too, like in the fall, was playing with Team Canada. I was watching some highlights. Like, with him healthy, people don't realize he was banged up last year. In 2022, when they went to the Final Four, he was a 40-point scorer from the midfield. Sam English is high-end.
Jake Stevens, who we'll talk about later at 16, or maybe we'll talk about him now. I mean, but Jake Stevens was doing everything. Man up, man down, wings of face-offs, like just an amazing skill set.
If Jake Stevens wants to play professional lacrosse in two leagues, he can do that for 12 years, hands down. He's an unbelievable talent. I say this with the highest regard, because the guy that I'm saying in terms of the skill set, stylistically, they're a little different. But like he does some things that Zach Currier does. Like he affects a game like Zach Currier. He can play man down. He can play man up. He can play wings. And you know, you always say like, oh, he's a poor man Zach Currier. Like if you're a poor man Zach Currier, you're like the best two-way middie in the country. Jake Stevens is phenomenal.
34, Ben Ramsey, short stick defensive middie, Notre Dame, a guy who I thought really turned the corner late last year, April and May. He played great in championship weekend. He's a monster of an athlete. I think about a guy like Aiden McGuire of Duke. Duke had a bunch of freshman and sophomore shorties last year, I think, who are going to really make that team better. I have no complaints about Ramsey. I think he's a superb player. Shane Knobloch comes in at 33. Seems like he's around forever. Burst onto the scene. He's a Jersey kid playing for Rutgers at the midfield, and he continues to improve. His sidearm shot on the run last year was vicious. Dealt with that ankle injury. Was that 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Yeah. Yep.
He's a pro.
He is a pro. Knobloch really can hammer it with both hands too. Like he is very, very two-handed. He can split both ways. His offensive teammate, Ross Scott's on the list, who I think should be on the list. But if you were to ask me, better skill set, better lacrosse player, I might take Knobloch over Ross Scott.
Richard Checo, another pole from Lehigh, comes in at 32.
Cost turnover machine.
He's something else to deal with. Let's just put it that way. The ball's on the ground. You better watch out for him. He's trail checking people to death. 31, Luke Wierman, Maryland. Is he the best Fogo in the country when he's healthy? Perhaps.
Yeah. Wierman, if you were to tell me after Maryland won in 2022, what Wehrman would be like coming into 2024, I would say no one will even challenge this guy. Because think about him in 2022. He was awesome. But it tells you something. And if you go back in time, you'll solidify this thought more. Fogos who have great early success, with the exception of like a Trevor Baptiste, who's almost not normal, their better years are earlier in college. The wear and tear on these guys. Like, look at Ben Williams. Remember when he came to Syracuse in 2015? He was an absolute buzzsaw. 7,000 faceoffs later, right? Wear and tear on the body. You get nicked up. And it is a grueling, grueling position.
And the book is out on you.
Yes.
There's more film to analyze. There's more tendencies to study. There's more coaching that goes into, hey, we know that Luke does X, Y, and Z. His counter is this. If you jam him, he does this. And so it gets tougher for those guys to have success.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
All right, we're not even halfway done. Let's pick it up. Mason Woodward, Marquette. Really, really good lacrosse player. I know that this defender ranks high in terms of PLL draft boards. I wouldn't be surprised if he's on P. Clark's top 20.
He's very good. He's great with the stick. He's good in the middle of the field. He's asked to guard opposing teams' top guys too. So he's got a little bit of versatility. I think he could flex in the PLL as an LSM or a close guy. So I like him here. And I also like the fact that, you know, we're going after a guy like a Mason Woodward from a Marquette, or, you know, Roy Meyer down there at BU is another guy that we'll talk about later on. But yeah, you got the Checos, the Myers, the Woodwards, right? They don't play in the ACC or the Big Ten or the Ivy, but they're getting recognition because they're in the middle of the field. If they were a close defender, they probably wouldn't get that kind of recognition.
Logan McNaney from Maryland, coming off an injury, their goaltender, had really good moments. You know, he's not visually explosive, but gosh, he's always in good position. He seems to read shooters. He catches the ball often. Be interesting to see what he looks like coming off that knee injury this year. Peyton Cormier, 28, Virginia attack / midfield. New offensive coordinator down in Charlottesville. Cormier, to me, sometimes can be hit or miss. You know, he'll bust out and bury five goals, and then the next week he's a turnover machine when he's asked to carry the ball. For me, he's a tough read, Paul.
You know, for me, not as much, because I think what you're referring to is, like, for example, Duke plays him and forces him to be like a ball carrier, right? Don't they force him to go to the goal?
They want the ball and a stick.
They short stick him. He'll still go to the goal. And he'll score and he'll be productive, but the offense as a whole maybe doesn't flourish as much. When he's playing his role and Schellenberger is in a groove and the ball is spinning and he's on the backside at above that lefty pipe area, he's as good as anyone in terms of ice in the veins and finishing. You talk about a big guy too. When I was down at Virginia, Cormier is so big in terms of just his shoulders. Like, his shoulders are massive. And I think if you give him the ball in the right spots and the offense is running the right way, I'm signing up for Peyton Cormier with the ball on his stick late in the game any day of the week.
I agree. And your point about the way Duke plays him is spot on. He is a terrific mid-range hammer, especially from that left wing. Bo Peterson, Michigan transfer from Princeton, a short stick defensive midi, maybe the best at his position in the country. We'll see.
Yeah. I look, Michigan, didn't they get Khalil Roberts too?
Cahal Roberts.
Yeah.
Pedersen and one other.
Yeah. They got Christian Ronda, didn't they?
Yeah.
Three guys from Michigan, or two Michigan from Princeton. I mean, can you imagine Princeton never lost any of these guys, right, over the years? Princeton's been fleeced by other schools more than anyone because of the Ivy shutdown in 21 and COVID in 20. I mean, props to Matt Matalon. Like, he's finding these guys. Patterson is from Utah. He's from Park City, Utah. a really good football player as well. Talk about a dude that fits the part too in the eye test. Like, he's a hammer.
Well, the Ivies are worth discussion here, Clark, because Matt Brandau's on the list up at 9, but his teammates Leo Johnson and Chris Lyons aren't on this list. And, you know, in general, we covered the Ivy League championship last year up in Manhattan, and the conference had great offense last year. The conference had explosive offense. All the teams, whether it was Cornell with CJ Kearse, whether it was Princeton, whether it was Yale, nobody in the league really wanted to play any kind of defense. Your thoughts on Lyons and Leo being left off?
If you want to know the truth, if you were to ask me right now, who would you take, Brandau or Lyons, Brandau or Johnson? And this is no disrespect to Matt Brandau, and I applaud his production over the years. He's a phenomenal lacrosse player. But since you're bringing it up, I think Lyons and Johnson provide more of a punch. If you want to know the truth, I think Brandau's way too high at number 9. Is he a top 50 player? Yeah. I think Johnson and Lyons had 60 something goals last year, 60 something goals. And you talk about an attackman who can score with shooting from the outside, but creates his own. He's a big, strong player. You know, kind of has some aspects of like a Jesse Hubbard in him, I think. I think Lyons is a phenomenal talent. Leo Johnson's first step is lightning quick. He's a lefty, slasher, dodger, passer. This is a unit in terms of their overall attack. Should hands down be a top 3 attack unit in the country. I think Brandau at 9 is too high. Do you feel that way?
Perhaps I don't know what his injury situation was last year. There was a tad bit of inconsistency in his game. Andy Shea has always been bullish on him. Andy Shea from the day one has compared him to Ben Reeves as if he is one of the great players in the history of Yale lacrosse. So we'll see.
Thing on Brandau. If you want to know my feeling about Brandau, is I think he's a phenomenal off ball player, and sometimes they ask him a little bit too much in terms of carrying the ball. When you have Johnson and you have Lyons as a lefty and a righty, I actually think if you were to put Matt Brandau inside, he could score 60 goals as an off-ball attackman, because I think his lacrosse IQ is off the charts, and he's a phenomenal goal scorer. He doesn't shoot the ball really hard, but he's very accurate, and there's purpose to the way that he shoots. I would use him more inside.
26, Ross Scott, Rutgers attack, great speed, a straight line guy. Doesn't have the shake behind the net, but he's got acceleration, and he can boom, exclamation mark, toast you on the run. Jack Posey, 25, Penn State defender who tore his ACL late in the season. Because of that, I would bump Jack back. I think he's got the ability to be a top 5 defender in the country, but coming off an ACL injury,
it's a big ask.
I have more of a wait and see approach.
Well, I do too, because he's a big physical guy too. So when you're coming off an ACL, if you play the leverage game and you like to get, you know, deep into a coverage perspective when you're guarding an attackman, you're gonna be asked a lot of that knee. So I think wait and see. If he wasn't injured, hands down, he did a great job last year prior to his injury. I mean, he turned into a top cover guy, and that's a big reason why that defense was such an improved unit under defensive coordinator Joe Bucci.
Yes, and I like Jack a lot. He's a completely self-made guy. He's continuing to improve.
Great young man.
Continue to improve every year. 24, Graham Bundy Jr., Georgetown midfielder. The show is finally his.
It's his, but a lot of what Bundy's been able to do over the years is, you know, you look at his first year, his redshirt freshman year, he had a ton of goals. He's a goal scorer. Production is off the charts. I think, you know, we talk about playing with certain types of talents. I think Bundy is the type of guy, if you ask him to be the number one, his production can fall potentially this year. But if you ask him to be the number two and you put him in spots where he's shooting or he's coming off of picks and he's hammering it from 10, 12, he's as good of a shooter from a mid-range standpoint as any in the country.
Yeah, former member of Team USA, the under 20 division, was at two summers ago.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Kark. I think he in the PLL as a pro, as a two or a three midi, he's going to fit that like a glove, man.
Yeah, and if he's asked to be the number one at Georgetown, it'll be interesting to see. Like if you put him with Minikis and you put him with
Dordovic,
and you give him those step downs, man. Like, and you know, it's all about pieces to the puzzle where he is a pro type of player because he understands how to play without the ball. I just wonder if he's going to play with the ball too much this year.
23 is Joey Spallina, now a sophomore for Syracuse. He played up in Canada this summer. Superbly productive player. In his sleep, he gets 2-2. I had some concerns about his speed and his explosion. He's so smart, so strong, and so good in the closet, in the phone booth, that it doesn't really matter. And he's a guy that, I don't know, is 40-40 out of the question?
No. I honestly think if Syracuse can make the playoffs and get to the quarters or potentially championship weekend, I wouldn't be shocked if Spallina led the country in points. That would not surprise me because he knows how to play the game. And like you said, he's not blowing by anyone, but he plays with his body so, so well. His lacrosse IQ is off the charts. Pat March has an offense that's super, super productive where it's predicated on ball movement. The ball moves at hyperspeed. When you watch that unit, when they play in the extra man, they play in 6-on-6. If you've zoned a team like Syracuse, you are toast. This unit is stacked. And if Mason Conn can win faceoffs, I know this sounds nuts, but if Mason Conn can win faceoffs, Spallina can lead the nation in goals, assists, or whatever it is, points, because he is, like you said, 40-40 guy. I look at him as a top scorer in the country this year because of that. But they're so tied to possessions. And Syracuse lacked possessions last year and still scored 14 goals a game.
Joey Spallina has maybe the most advanced mind that I have seen for a college attackman at his age.
Yeah, I mean, the game means so much to him. And when the game means so much to a player, there's a purpose and drive. And when you live, eat, breathe lacrosse, you're constantly watching. Your instincts are higher. Your IQ is higher. Like he's always, always learning. And his move to Canada this summer, my only concern is that is this guy playing too much lacrosse.
Yeah, right? his health and his mental health.
Yeah, but he loves the game of lacrosse so much. You know, and you're putting him around other box guys like Owen Hiltz, Trey Deer, Finn Thompson, Stevens, English. Like, think about those guys' skill sets.
No, and there's growth there for him. And so I give him a ton of credit for doing it. What else is he going to do?
He's way too low. Like, he's at 23.
He's a top 10-ish player. Yes. Maybe 15
to 20. I'd be totally comfortable switching Vardaro and Spallina. If you told me Vardaro was 23 and Spallina was 7, would you flinch?
No.
Like Vardaro is a very good player. I don't look at him as the number 7th player in the country. And that's not a slight at him. Like there's so much talent here. Like Vardaro, top 7 player in the country. Like he's better than Joey Spallina.
You can read about my snubs, a bunch of guys that I felt were left off this list as we continue. 22, Michael Gianforcaro, the goalie from Princeton, who kind of burst on the scenes at that Ivy League championship, had a big game earlier in the year. Princeton had a goalie battle, and now Gio is the guy. I think he's very gifted. I mean, he is so light on his feet. He's super explosive, and he plays with this certain type of emotion. I'm just not sure Princeton's going to be any good and give him any protection.
Man, Ivy championships we did first week of the playoffs. I was at Penn State. I mean, this guy's – he was riding that goalie high. I actually want to see him now that he's able to catch his breath. Like, I want to see him at the end of February or March because – He was on that goalie still, high. I'm like, yo, wake up, dude. Right?
I'm still riding it, Kark. Your brother's still riding.
Exactly. So to me, you probably think I'm nuts, but I actually want to see him when he's the established starter. Like, he was in a goalie battle last year, right? And that goalie, I think, went on to Duke. Was it Griffin Reckweiler? Yeah. He's at Duke now. So they battled last year. So I want to see when it's his job and when he's lost all those pieces, like, yo, he could be seeing Will Mark type shots.
And it gets to a stage where you're not playing on adrenaline, you're not playing on juice. Yeah. And that's when your mind game becomes strong, because you've got to convince yourself when it's a Tuesday game against blank. Yeah. I don't want to say
when that time is in my life. That's Sunday morning when I land at like 1 a.m. in New York and I go from LaGuardia to Connecticut, and then my son wakes up at 5 a.m. on Sunday and I have like three hours of sleep. That's when I ride off adrenaline.
TJ Malone, Penn State, 21. Again, a guy we could probably put in the top 10. He finished the season with incredible performances. His speed, I know the PLL coaches and scouts love him. Maybe he's a middie in the pro league. But that high two-man game that Penn State did last year from the high wing, running him off the picks where he'd either split it and come back to the middle or run down the alley. Man, I thought he was one of the best players in the country in the month of May.
I did too. And I always think when you say, oh, guys should be higher, like, all right, well, be willing to say who he should be higher than. And I'll tell you right now. So, like, you have a guy like TJ Malone at 21. I'm taking him over Naso, 19. I know Naso means a ton to his team, and he might be the best face-off guy in the country. I think TJ Malone's a better lacrosse player. I also think he's better than Matt Brando at 9.
I think he's better than he's more important than Eric Dobson or Andrew McAdory. I mean,
absolutely.
I love McAdory is an exceptional player. Again, a future pro, attack midi. But if McAdory didn't dress for Duke, they still make championship weekend.
No way that happens with TJ Malone. Yeah, I take TJ Malone over McAdory. I mean, McAdory also, going back to what I was saying earlier, Q, McAdory a lot of games has the number 3 guy on him. Okay? The number 3. TJ Malone, the minute he gets off the school bus, has the number 1 guy on him.
Double teams coming before he can put his uniform on. Scott Smith, Johns Hopkins, 20. It's a defender I got a lot of respect for. This guy has held up his end of the premier matchups for Hopkins' schedule, which is very challenging.
And he swings, man. When you watch him, how hard he checks, too. You better have your big boy arm pads on when you go against Smith. He is laying lumber.
You mentioned Jake Naso, the Fogo for Duke, comes in at 19. Jack Frassion, Penn State's goalie, comes in at 18. His performance last year was off the charts. I've never seen a goalie get hit in the legs more than he does. He's got the uncanny ability to make body saves. I've never seen anything like it. My question would be, is that going to even out somewhere along the line?
No, the answer is no, and I'll tell you why. If you watch Blaze Reardon, he gets hit, like, he makes chicken wing saves, and it doesn't happen like 1 week. And yeah, maybe one slides by here and there, but there's a reason. There's like those subtle little steps, and there's the instincts and the body language. I don't need to tell you, as a goalie, there's a reason he's getting hit consistently with those shots. Is there's a reason, like, you know when Blaze kind of squats down and his knees like buckle together and he makes some ridiculous save? Like, you see me on a Zoom now.
He makes that blocker save or like he'll flare his calf out to make a low save. Intentional. Those aren't accidents. Because in those situations, Blaze knows that his stick's not going to get there. He cannot move his stick. He doesn't have the time.
No. So you got to come up with. He's going to continue doing that. Yes.
Okay. 17, Dyson Williams, masterful summer for Team Canada in San Diego as a Dodger and ball carrier. I'm watching some of these games, Kark, and I'm saying, that's not the same Dyson Williams. So which Dyson Williams is employed by Duke in their offense this year?
Dyson Williams, we talk about guys playing two leagues like Jake Stevens. Dyson Williams will play in two pro leagues for 10, 15 years. Yeah, he will. And he'll score a zillion goals. I think he needs to be used as a dodger off of ball movement, right? Like if you're spinning the ball and someone has a poor approach, he will slip his shoulders. And I think he needs more of a green light in that respect. What you saw in Team Canada when he was dodging out of the box and everyone in the stadium knows he's dodging, I don't think that's his game. In all due respect to the World Championships, how many teams played real defense there? One and a half?
One.
Yeah, exactly. So my point is, college defenses are a lot harder to beat than Team Australia, right? So when Dyson Williams was asked to long dodge this summer, when we saw him doing some of those things, that's not his skill set. His skill set is finishing everything under the sun and dodging off of ball movement. And he's phenomenal at both.
Tyler Buchner comes in at 15, midfielder, Notre Dame.
He threw me off there for a second. What's going on here?
So big news this week is apparently Tyler Buchner is going to leave Alabama as a quarterback and transfer. I think he's headed to Notre Dame. We'll find out officially. He was one of the most sensational 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds that I've ever seen at the World Series of Youth Lacrosse, which was out in Denver. I remember Ben and I, Joe said to me, "Hey, this kid from California is pretty good." I look out in the field, there's 400 kids. I go, "Oh yeah, there he is, number 12. He was about a half a foot taller than everybody. And he was a phenom. Now, what did we learn from Ricky Miazon of Virginia last year? It's hard to make the transition.
What did you learn from Chris Hogan when he went to the PLL? It's hard to make the transition.
Ricky was 7 goals and 2 assists in 16 games. I think Ricky was sitting on a big year this year. I think he could have been a 20-goal scorer this year, a better defensive midi, a better ground ball. So with Tyler, I'm going to temper my expectations for year two, because apparently he has at least 2 more years of eligibility. I think it's going to take him at least a full spring to dust off the rust
unequivocally
and get up to speed.
His skill set, and I saw him in the ninth grade, he was awesome. Like a big downhill dodger, like alley dodger type guy, hammer of a shot, right? And a phenomenal athlete. The college game is so much different in terms of how it's played. And his skill set probably would have, even if he made the jump, needed some time to adjust. You take a stick out of his hand for the last 4 or 5 years. I look at Tyler Buchner as a guy, maybe you'll get him on some wings, play him maybe at short stick D-Midi. I'd be shocked if he's playing offense for the Fighting Irish this year.
Processing speed is what you're referring to. The processing speed, the hand, the eyes, like, the hand.
You got to understand, this guy is a guy who played with the ball on his stick for a long time to begin with. Then you make him sit out for 4 or 5 years. Like, that's a big ask.
Yeah. No, the real list has Cole Kastner of Virginia coming in at 15. It's a guy who apparently is going to be maybe playing a year of college basketball when his lacrosse career is done. He's, 6'6".
Phenomenal.
Big-time player.
I also think in the PLL, if he decides to play in the PLL, doesn't chase basketball, he could be a long stick midi too.
I liked him there last year. I thought it got him more involved in the game.
Yeah, in the middle of the field and he's hunting guys down and they employ him in that ride, I think like that's where he's really, really dangerous. So I look at him as a guy that's probably a little bit more versatile than people might think.
Body type opposite is Roy Meyer, a BU LSM who comes in at 14. Ground ball hound,
cause turnover machine hound. I'd love to see the race for the Patriot League cause turnover battle between him and Richard Checo this year. Like, who's going to get more cause turnovers? That's a serious debate.
Both of them built in the Gavin Adler mode, mode of body type and attitude.
Yeah, both don't have the feet of Adler, though.
13, Eric Dobson, Notre Dame. Thought he showed a lot of growth last year. This is a guy who can hammer it. Became a better passer. I still think he's got more upside. I mean, if he puts it all together, to me, he's the type of guy who should be in the running down the road for a Team USA spot.
Yeah, just a physical force, a lefty hammer. And like teams last year, do you remember championship weekend? He was getting a short stick a bunch of times. Like he had a shorty against him in UVA. in the UVA game in the semis. Like, he feasted on a shorty. This guy just, to me, he's got range. And the one thing I saw earlier in 2023 last season was he started passing better, too.
I was going to say, yeah, his passing and his offhand were dramatically improved.
Yes, absolutely.
McAdory's 12. Kenny Brower is a defender I love coming in at 11. I mean, Kenny Brower feels like he's been playing college lacrosse for a decade. He has played so many monster matchups in his career. Like, is there a guy as a goalie that I don't trust more than Kenny Brower? When if I had to pick, hey, you come with me, let's go play this game.
Like, he's awesome. Awesome. And I'm going to say one thing on McAdory. McAdory isn't even being used, I think, to his greatest skill set. And I know last year they needed a quarterback, and he's such a good lacrosse player that they could put him behind. Andrew McAdory, to me, and now that you bring in a guy like Josh Zawada on the right side, maybe you put Zawada in that spot and you have O'Neal and Dyson Williams playing attack together, and it allows McAdory to go back to midfield. Because guess what? McAdory, like you said, is a pro, but he's a pro as a middie. He can play the wing on a faceoff. He's space. Great on defense.
He needs space.
Nails. He needs space, and he needs to be in the middle of the field. He is not an ex-attackman. He's a phenomenal lacrosse player, and I know you can play him anywhere, but if you really want to play him in the spot where he will flourish and stand out every single game, it's midfield. Going to Brower, kind of to the point of Bobby Van Buren. There are games when you watch a guy like Brower or you watch Van Buren and you say, oh, I didn't even recognize him out there. Ha, yeah, that's right. You didn't recognize him because the guy he was covering did nothing. All right. And Brower is that kind of defender. Steady, not the flashiest guy in the world, but man alive, man. When he gets in a stance, he is tough to beat.
A lot of respect. Our top 10 has 7 attackmen, 1 middie, 1 D, and 1 goalie. Let's start with a bunch of attackmen. Mikey Boehm from Michigan led the Michigan program to the NCAA tournament, a Big Ten championship, and a first-round win. It'll be interesting to see what his game is like without Josh Zawada, but I had Kevin Connery on this podcast a couple weeks ago, Kark, and I think Michigan has reloaded in a lot of ways. They're still very strong.
Michigan's very strong, and they brought in a goal scorer from Lehigh. The guy, kid Justin Tierney, he can fill it up, fill the back of the net up, and kind of play off of Mikey Boehm. And you still have Ryan Cohn there, who plays on the left side. Not to mention those guys you brought in: Pedersen, Khalil Roberts, Christian Ronda. Michigan's not going anywhere right now.
Yeah, Ronda's pretty good with the split. He's a true two-handed midfielder. We talked about Brandow at 9. Coulter McAsee was one of your favorites last year. I think naturally you were one of the first to spot his excellence. The attackman from Princeton his production went through the roof. An accomplished high school and youth squash player. He's got those hands. He's got good feet and good balance, and his ability to rip corners last year was something else. Not sure what the supporting cast on Princeton's offense is going to look like, but tell me why you like Coulter.
Because Coulter made the jump his freshman year. He scored a lot of goals, and he was playing with Chris Brown and a lot of other seasoned attackmen. And he made that jump last year, and he was getting the number one every single game. And there were games where he was generating 17, 18 shots. Like, this guy can get to the rack. He does it sometimes unassumingly, like where he doesn't need to blow by you, kind of like Connor Fields. You know, Connor Fields is like, yo, this guy doesn't run by anyone. He gets a shot off every single time. And Coulter McAsee.
Shooting off of the hip, shooting off of people's
heads. Yes, that's Coulter McAsee, because you have all these different release points. Like, Coulter McAsee kind of has a little bit of the Connor Fields in him where, like, he doesn't need to run by you. He's still going to get his, and he's still going to shoot 15 times a game.
Alex Vardaro, transfer from Princeton to Georgetown, middie at number 7. We spoke about him earlier. I think he's a very, very good player. I love the balance in his skill set. He can pass. He can play without the ball. He can hammer home a mid-ranger, a really talented player. 6, Ajax Zapatello. And this list is missing some Maryland guys. Braden Irksa, who's their super freshman last year, not on this list. Their goalie is. Their faceoff man is. We'll find out about the Terps. I think they're going to be better than people think. But Ajax Zapatello, in my eyes, is a top 10 defender. Not sure he deserves to be sixth best player in the country.
Brett Makar was a multi-time first-team All-American, multi-time Big Ten Defender of the Year, and a lot of times Ajax took the number one. John Tillman had flexibility depending on the skill sets of opposing teams' offensive attackmen, and sometimes it was Zapatello who got the number one. Kind of like Brower, where he's not ultra-flashy, but there's so much substance to his game.
Yeah, he is... His footwork is really, really, really technically sound. Is he rarely lunges. I like just the way he sits down and covers guys. Pat Cavanaugh, Notre Dame, attack. Health concerns? Was he the Cavanaugh that I saw in a sling during the Pat McAfee show?
Yeah, he was. He was banged up. I would assume he'll be healthy. I mean, worst comes to worst. You just tape a new hamstring and he's good to go, right?
I mean, can we book these top five for the Tawara time? Pat Cavanaugh, Liam Entenmann, CJ Kearse, Connor Schellenberger, and Brendan O'Neill?
I mean, as crazy as it sounds, you might be able to, just because you know these teams are going to be in the mix. The one player, you know, Entenmann we talked about earlier too, MVP, was absolutely phenomenal. Schellenberger, since day one, he was a first-team All-American, Schellenberger, at midfield as a freshman, and he's been a first teamer the last 2 years at attack. His skill set is completely off the charts. And Brendan O'Neill is Shaquille O'Neill with a lacrosse stick and skill. Like he's not normal. But the one guy to me that I think if Cornell could find a way to get to quarterfinal weekend and championship weekend, CJ Kearse, man, like that dude. We talked about Spallina going up north to play box too. CJ Kearse went up and played box in Canada this summer. Like, does this guy really need to get any better? Like his jump from 2022 as a freshman to 23 when he developed the right hand last year, Quint, you did some of his games too. Like he's got a legit right hand. Ah, I know it sounds nuts, but He could win the Tawarton, and that's with Schellenberger and O'Neill, the reigning trophy holder.
His effort, his body language, and his hunger, you can
love
just see
about it.
You can just see it. He loves the game, and I think he elevates his teammates. He elevates his teammates by the way he approaches the game. We've seen that from his brothers in the pro league, but you just feel it when he's out there.
Let me ask you this question, okay? You know what you're getting every single time CJ Kearse. Like, you rarely see a bad game. There's been some games that O'Neill, you scratch your head and you're like, oh, where is he today? This guy should score 10 goals every game. He's that good, right? Schellenberger, sometimes last year he was nicked up a little bit here and there. The one guy on this list, like, if you had to bet one guy on this list to give you production in a single game and you had to rely on it, who is it for you? For me, it's CJ Kearse. Like, you had to have it. I'm not saying that, like, you're looking for the 10-goal game or you're looking for a super freakazoid of an attackman and Brendan O'Neill. I'm not looking for, like, the ceiling of every single player. But if you needed a game, who's the one guy you're taking?
That's a very valid point. I think what you're talking about is emotional maturity. I think what you're talking about is competitive excellence.
Yes.
True competitive, consistent excellence.
Yes. He's the guy.
Last thing about Brendan O'Neill, you know, what we saw in San Diego, running him from the midfield in the championship game against Canada caught me off guard a bit. And to see him bury those left-handed shots on the run down the alley, it makes you think that, I don't know, you know, like he could play anywhere. Maybe you let, if you're Duke's offensive coordinator, Matt Danowski, maybe you don't really plug Brennan into a spot. You put everyone else where they're most comfortable, and Brennan can do anything you want him to do.
What Brennan showed us in San Diego was when a guy that skilled has that much momentum in terms of just like like a big Mack truck coming downhill, right? Like you're not stopping it. So coming through the box and letting him run as opposed to catching a ball on the wing and not getting that momentum, right? Maybe there's a guy that's waiting for him the second he catches the ball, kind of like fake guarded him last year at Notre Dame. When we saw him through the box, it's like it was almost like a different type of player that, yes, it opened your eyes to thinking what could be. But I think what Brennan O'Neill showed us last year in the World Championships or this past summer, he's a generational talent. And sometimes we throw that word around a little bit too much. Like Brennan O'Neill is one of those guys from a skill set standpoint. He's not normal.
No, we haven't seen the scope of this skill set ever before in this package, in this big, strong, explosive body. Yeah.
Gary Gate.
Yeah.
That's it.
Very different players, but there's so much there for O'Neal. Again, and when he made those plays for Team USA, you're sitting there saying, wow, we had kind of boxed him into what we think he is, and there's still more there. Wow, that's incredible.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Well, Carr, great to see you, man.
You too, man. I know you wanted to rip through this list a little bit more, but I'm not the guy to do that, man. I can't do this in 20 minutes. Sorry. No.
Jeez, this is the longest podcast in our history. I want to thank our listeners. I want to thank our Dr. Nick Z. He's our technical expert. Everybody enjoy December. We got the Army-Navy game this week, and then we got bowl season. And before you know it, it'll be January, and teams will be starting practice. So 2 months to games. 2 months to games. We have not seen our schedule yet for the month of February. But I'm pretty sure that it's likely you'll be seeing some college lacrosse games on the ACC Network and ESPNU in the month of February.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Q.
That's it for this week's episode of the Quintessential Podcast. Thank you to our guests. Thanks to our technical director, Dr. Nick Z. I want to thank you for listening. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, Axia Time. A watch. What a better gift than a ring. I've got a championship ring. It's collecting dust in a box. I wear watches all the time. Thank you, Axia Time. It's axiatime.com. And we'll see you next week.